one may consider sometimes, you know, that how is this list of names of kings practically with very little discussion, if any, on their activities, what they did, or the relationship with the material image of Jewish humanity. Just, you know, a few of the essential statements. Prabhupada actually mentions in the Krishna book, in relationship to the marriage of Queen Rukmini, that you know, when Krishna married Queen Rukmini, of course he had to go and snatch her away from the Sisupala, and so there was a big battle really involved in that marriage, and one may question. In fact, it's described that there were so many armies and so many allies who went to that wedding, just so equipped soldiers, horses, infantry, chariots, elephants like that, that it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam that it appeared that they were going there more to fight with Krishna than for the wedding. But still, it was a massive big battle. You know, there are a class of devotees who want to take certain parts of Krishna's lila as being transcendental and important, and they say that other parts are not very important. Not only that, but of course, you know, because the personalities like that, of course, are hajjus. In other words, they take Krishna consciousness very cheaply. They really have no idea of what Krishna consciousness is. What's the speaker rejecting parts of Srimad Bhagavatam? They also reject study of Vedanta or the commentaries by the Vaishnava Acharyas and the Vedanta. They reject the study of the Bhagavad Gita. They say that these things are all for the neophytes, or, you know, the non-devotees like this, and they just reject so much of this. Whereas Srila Prabhupada says that actually a devotee of the Lord will not reject one drop of the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam or anything related to Krishna. Not one drop. Not a scary. Like a hungry man. You know, you put a plate of food before a hungry man, hasn't eaten since the day before. A nice plate of halva, sabji, nice prasad. And you see that hungry man, just, you know, how much he'll, you look at his plate afterwards, back when you see him licking. But, you know, someone who's, you know, perhaps doesn't have that hunger, you know, they give a nice prayer, they may leave so much. So the actual devotees of the Lord, they're like that. Their hunger for Krishna, their mood of feeling separation from God is so intense that there only has to be the slightest little element of a relationship with Krishna, and they will die on that opportunity somehow or another. We see that Srimati Radharani so intensely absorbed in the mood of separation from Krishna that even a bumblebee is flying past. I mean, she goes into a whole conversation, she sees the little redness, which is some pollen on the stash of, you know, and she's thinking, or, you know, you have been, you know, you have been with Krishna while he's been with the queens, and the kumkum from, you know, has rubbed off from the queens onto, you know, Krishna's garb, and then you've got it on your stash. So she, you know, just so intensely absorbed in Krishna that everything and anything is just totally connected with Krishna like that. So they don't. So it depends, of course, upon a devotee's, you know, whether they're Prabhupada. Sure, Prabhupada wanted not a class of sahajas, but he wanted a class of devotees who are actually attached to God, who actually love Krishna, who actually you know, have affection, and you know, it's like that song of George Lennon, George Harrison, that you know, my sweet Lord, I really want to be with you. And Srila Prabhupada really liked the you know, the sentiments that he had, that yearning, you know, to be with the Supreme Lord. So when a devotee has that, of course, then one will not consider even a drop of the topics related to Krishna as insignificant or any less important than any other subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Here we see that if we can understand, here Sukadeva Goswami is giving a list of the kings that basically came right down through into Kali Yuga. So in Canto 9, the last king mentioned, Purunjaya, or also known as the also known as Rupanjaya. So actually in Canto 9 you see his name listed as Rupanjaya, but it's the same person, Purunjaya. So Sukadeva Goswami left up there about 1,000 years AD. No, not 1,000 years. 1,000 years after the departure of Krishna, sorry. Yeah. 1,000 years. That's where that list came to. So 1,000 years into Kali Yuga. And up until that point, we see that there was no mention of any kings ever being assassinated or, you know, that sort of level of political intrigue and violence. Whereas in this list that he is giving now, there was a different mood from the very beginning. We see here that with Purunjaya, that his minister assassinated King Purunjaya and then put his own son on the throne, and we see that this comes down, you know, through the line. These kings gradually become very degraded. This list of kings that he is giving now actually takes us up to about 1200 AD, or the 12th century AD. So, you know, right into our sort of modern history. So this list is basically from about 4,000 years ago to about a little under 1,000 years ago. We see a marked difference because this list of kings is coming in the Kali Yuga. So even up to about 1,000 years after the departure of Krishna, still, you know, within the Chatri line, there was an ability for the kings to actually have qualities where they could represent the Supreme Lord. And gradually, from that point on, we see that the kings become sutras and less than sutras. They have no status as twice born. Even if they're initiated as twice born, their qualities, their culture is less. So therefore, Chatriya Bandhus. And in fact, they extremely lusty, very greedy, very angry, very erratic in their behaviour, coveting others' wives, others' property, murderous. So sometimes murdering, you know, if we look at the history, you know, of monarchy and kings and queens, you know, during this time, you know, they're killing their own children, they're killing their own husbands, they're killing their own wives, they're killing their own you know, relatives, they're killing the king, and they're so, you know, the orgies. So there's a big difference in this list here. So, of course, Sukadeva Goswami, of course, is showing the nature of Kali Yuga, which is coming. He's speaking this to Maharaj Brigid, and eventually he will describe to Maharaj Brigid that in Kali Yuga, the people will have no other resource except to chant the holy names of the Lord. And therefore, you know, that is the one benefit. But of course, the wonderful thing about that is that simply by chanting the holy names of the Lord, they can be protected from the influence of Kali Yuga. Now also, Sukadeva Goswami describes that in order for a person to actually develop attachment for chanting the holy names of the Lord, they need to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from the devotees of the Lord, and if they hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from the devotees of the Lord, they will actually become attached to chanting Hare Krishna. And the more that they scrutinizingly study the Srimad Bhagavatam, the more that they will actually be attached to chanting Hare Krishna and thinking of Krishna, and in this way they will be completely free from this influence of Kali Yuga, which degrades all living beings and causes the ruination of all living entities. So Sukadeva Goswami is giving the conclusion that if someone doesn't take to the process of chanting Hare Krishna, then they will either be persons who are under the rule of these Kali Yuga kings. Right? So that means they will be under the rule of persons who are murderers, lusty, greedy, violent, erratic, you know, vicious, you know, with complete debauches. You know, this list just goes on, and they get worse and worse as we go through the list. So, an intelligent person will understand that. You know, we see, you know, for instance, in Israel at the moment, that you know, some of the citizens, Gaddafi, where is Gaddafi? Is that Iran? Libya, the citizens are wanting some, you know, protection from the king, and some, you know, to, you know, they want the ruler to help them to, they're suffering so much, and they just want, can you please help us? The whole population of the country feels like we're suffering, you know, living a degraded existence. What is the reaction of the government? Oh, we will kill them and stop your moaning. You know, we'll shoot you down like this. That is our way of fixing things. We're not going to offer you any concessions. You accept that level of suffering, and if you don't like it, we'll kill you. There are your two options. Which one do you want? You know, we see that in every country. Sometimes, you know, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that, you know, the rulers of this world are actually very great personalities. And we accept that conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they become more and more degraded. The mass of people may foolishly accept that the rulers of this world are actually something more than they are. But as soon as the sense gratification, usually you find Sometimes one statement that's in the Srimad Bhagavatam which people have a lot of difficulty understanding or accepting is that the Srimad Bhagavatam says that unless one is devoted to the Lord, they have no good qualities. And you know, sometimes I often get asked that question, you know, "Fool, that's a heavy." You mean this person has no good qualities? This person? I see so many people with good qualities. But the Srimad Bhagavatam informs us that yes, there can be the appearance of good qualities, but you disturb the sense gratification of those people who appear to have good qualities, and you see what comes out. That's what it takes. You just a little pinch of the sense gratification, and you see what happens. Okay. So, you know, there is a veneer. And you know, people have to be very, very careful. That, you know. So Sukadeva Goswami is pointing out, so clear is the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam that they're giving the names. And later on, we see in the description that describes, you know, the king under the advice of Chanakya Pandit. You know, there's some that we may recognize in modern history, some we may not, but the Srimad Bhagavatam is given, you know, to their names, their activity. This one will, you know, there's some little description. This one's son will, you know, kill him and, you know, take over the kingdom and, you know, this and that. The Srimad Bhagavatam giving very, very clear information. And that is also one of the purposes that Sukadeva Goswami is describing, that, you know, how the greater things become in Kali Yuga. And one may think, oh no, can that be? No, here, you know, this is, you know, exact information. It's not speculation. We can give scientific, you know, exact information. So so this line here, of course, is coming from this line described here. This is the Magadha line. Who is the famous person? The Magadha line, of course, is coming in the dynasty of the Sangha. Who is a very famous person coming?
Jarasandha.
Jarasandha. It describes in the purport that they were, you know, his father was Rehab Rust or something like that. But he was the father. Jarasandha's father had more than one wife, so there's a dynasty, but from one wife he gave birth to two halves of a child, which were the wife discarded into the forest, being so horrified, and those two halves were joined together by a witch, there was she in it, and she joined them together, you know, let this body come to life, and so Jarasandha came to life. So the kings are coming in the line of Jarasandha. We see that even Jarasandha, who was basically demoniac, but still he followed Vedic culture quite nicely, you know, in most respects, except for the fact that he didn't like Krishna. He didn't like, why didn't he like Krishna? He killed Kamsa. And how did that particularly affect Jarasandha?
Great friends.
Yes. His daughter was, so he led to, Krishna killed Kamsa, leaving Jarasandha's daughter's widow. Huh? Daughter?
Yeah.
Married to Kamsa. I don't know that he had children, male children anyway. So, you know, that really caused a lot of trouble. But Jarasandha, he decided that not only was he going to kill Krishna, he was going to kill the entire dynasty of the Yadus for what Krishna did. And so, you know, all of these personalities who become very inimical to Krishna, they wanted, therefore, they knew the book Mini, was wanted to marry Krishna, and so they arranged, you know, that Sisupala can marry, you know, Sisupala, who hates Krishna, you know, he can marry, in this way. Anyway, still, despite the fact that he was very, very envious of Krishna, he was very respectful to Vedic culture, Brahminical culture. And therefore, we see that even when was it Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna approached him for a fight, they came dressed up as Kshatriyas, as Brahmins, and they asked him in charity, you know, and this way they're sort of trying to induce him to fight. And then ultimately Bhima killed him by tearing him apart. That's one of the arts of the Vedas. And you see that when Krishna learned the Vedic sciences, there were 64 different sort of arts and sciences within the Vedas. Krishna learned in one day he would learn one science, and the same that day he would become expert at that, and then be practicing that in the evening, and then the next day. So one of the arts of the Vedas is to how to disguise yourself in such a way that you can walk up to your best friend and they won't recognize you. That's one. So, you know, he learned that even as a young child. So, you know, that would have a very tricky. But still, you know, the point is that Jarasandha, in many, many different ways, was actually quite chivalrous and very strictly followed Vedic culture. But he was very envious of Krishna. And therefore, he's a demon. And of course, we understand from that that just because one follows Vedic culture, that doesn't elevate him from the threshold of being a demon. Similarly, if people worship demigods, people sometimes take them as very pious, but it doesn't elevate them from the threshold of being a demon. Comes to worship Shiva. Many of the demons worship Lord Shiva. So, but from Jarasandha, who was there within period of Krishna, gradually things become more degraded as Kali Yuga went on until not even that far into Kali Yuga, 5,000 years, but so degraded for the rulers, and they just become more and more vicious and more debauchees. With each, we see with the royal family. You know, the Queen, practically one of the most pious women in the world. You know, the Queen of England, very, very pious. Very pure, you know, in most cases in her living standard, you know, to one degree or another, there was certainly some sinful activity there. The children, you know, and the other relatives, we see gradually more and more scandal. You know, they have more and more problems because they're just, they're being contaminated, degraded from, and their children more degraded, I guess. We see that while Krishna was on the planet, basically, Kali Yuga began when at about the end of the battle of Kurukshetra. So we do see that Duryodhana wanted to kill the Pandavas. So the influence was beginning, but because Krishna was present, any influence of Kali was thwarted. The attempt was there, but it was thwarted because Krishna was present. After Krishna disappeared, so from the battle of Kurukshetra, Kali was able to partially enter, but only after the very day that very time that Krishna disappeared, then Kali became fully manifest. But then even Parikh Maharaj, who actually represented Krishna and the Pandavas, he was also able to defeat Kali. But he was never influenced by Kali. Although, you know, we were discussing Bhakti Bhagavata, but although he appeared to become, you know, hungry and thirsty and angry at the sage who didn't receive him when he walked into the hermitage and therefore put a garland of a snake around his neck, that wasn't the influence of Kali. That was because Krishna wanted, one, to create a situation to take Parikh Maharaj back to the spiritual world. Two, to create a situation where the Srimad Bhagavatam would actually be spoken, just as Krishna created a situation with Arjuna to speak the Bhagavad Gita by placing him, you know, under his illusion by the spiritual energy, not the material energy. But actually, Parikh Maharaj defeated Kali by making him reside in five different places and nowhere else within his kingdom. And Kali agreed to it. Kali surrendered, yes. You know, I know that what you say will happen, otherwise you will kill me on the spot. And Parikh Maharaj had that ability to, you know, banish Kali completely. But, you know, Kali was always looking for the opportunity to enter, and he took that opportunity to enter through the a Brahmin boy who is very, very powerful with brahminical chakti or bhakti, born in a Brahmin family, trained as a Brahmin, but not cultured. In other words, he said he wasn't practicing the training that he had been given. And therefore, Kali, out of pride, you know, he was sort of showing off in front of his friend. Just see my brahminical power, I will curse this great king. Think about this. So he wasn't actually, he didn't really have the culture. With the corruption of the brahminical influence over the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras, gradually the Kshatriyas become degraded, then the Vaishyas become degraded, and then the Sudras become degraded. And because people follow the leaders. In fact, Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. Whatever a great man does, whatever actions he performs, others will, you know, perform those actions. And whatever standards that person sets, people will try and achieve those standards. So actually at the top of, you know, a society is the activities of the brahmanas who are perfect in their behaviour, and they guide, perfect in their behaviour, their knowledge, and they practice what, you know, they practice the culture, brahminical culture. The Kshatriyas then, they're aspiring for those wonderful qualities of the Brahmanas, and they're very happy to try and follow the activities described by the Brahmanas. But when the Brahmanas become corrupted, the Kshatriyas don't want to follow them. Or they imitate that corrupt behavior. You see that actually in Kali Yuga, people follow the leaders. They imitate their corrupt behavior. That this is the standard. You know, even if you go back 50 years, the leaders had a slightly higher standard. But because the standard of the leaders has so degraded, that people take, well, that's normal. You know, this is what the leaders of our society do, so that's normal. I want to be normal. I don't want to be misfit. I don't want to not fit in. So yeah, let me take intoxication, otherwise you don't fit in. You know, abortion, and this, and that, eat meat. I don't want to be a weirdo and, you know, some weird vegetarian. And this. You know, let me just do as what they're doing. That is normal. I want to be normal. And they become successful. They become powerful by these activities. Now this is the way to success. So people will actually imitate. So gradually it all began with the corruption of the Brahmins. Gradually, bang, 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 like dominoes falling. And you grab a mass of people, then become. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the 17th canto of the first 17th chapter of the first canto that the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna appeared in Kali Yuga in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. If there's no chance to put a good leader within power who actually wants to protect Brahminical culture or, you know, true religious principles and protect innocent animals like cows, children, women, you know, old people, Brahmins. If we can't find such a leader who has that conviction and the strength to back it up, then if we preach to the masses of the people the guidelines from Srimad Bhagavatam, the people themselves will have the knowledge and the power to correct things. That the mass of people, so even though the leaders may be corrupt and basically useless puppets, the masses of people will actually have the knowledge by which they can guide society through the masses. And we see that more and more in this world. You know, that actually, even now, you know, there are several countries right now where the masses of people have risen up that we are now telling, you know, forget these rulers who are, you know, divorcees, we will tell you how this country will run, you know, and that will become more and more prevalent in Kali Yuga. Therefore, what is missing? Someone needs to get in amongst that crowd in those squares where they're having protests and start, you know, speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, those children from birth are actually learning Srimad Bhagavatam, they'd be in those protests now, you know. We want this, it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We want that. But all they're going to do, because they have no knowledge, they're going to ask for another debauchee to replace the one they've got. And every time they replace one debauchee with another one, they get in that reward situation. Okay. And that, you know, without the Srimad Bhagavatam, that, you know, so Srimad Bhagavatam, so therefore you see Srila Prabhupada's the acharyas, just their keen vision, their book distribution. You know, get out on the streets and chant the holy names, distribute books to the masses, educate the masses of the people. And this. So, you know, as for devotees, of course, we're very fortunate. In one sense, in this part of the world, and there are different parts of the world where, you know, there is some piety left among some of the rulers. There are some parts of the world which are very, very unfortunate. But at the same time, you know, we would like to see that the guidelines of Srimad Bhagavatam, in other words, true religious principles of austerity, mercy, truthfulness, and cleanliness, you know, systematically taught, you know, through society and care protection. So therefore, our leaders that we look up to are personalities like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Everyone must have a guru, or everyone in this world follows someone else. When Srila Prabhupada went to Russia, you know, they say, oh, you know, they criticize, oh, you're following Krishna. Prabhupada said, we're all following someone. You're following them and I'm following Krishna. What's the difference? We're both following someone. You know, just come down to the question of, you know, what you're going to get by following them as to what you're going to get by following Krishna. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to show that everyone must follow a preceptor, then he also followed Ishvara Puri. Of course, tomorrow is Ishvara Puri's appearance day. Ishvara Puri was actually the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he follows very strictly the guidelines of Srimad Bhagavatam. That, you know, that we see in this 12th canto that it will describe that in this Kali Yuga, one should follow the Yuga avatar for Kali Yuga, who is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and chant the holy names of the Lord. And there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. Three times it repeats. If one thinks that by some very watered down methods that they're going to somehow rise above the powerful degrading influences of Kali, they're very, very mistaken. They will be simply swept away. Srimad Bhagavatam here is giving the list. You know, these kings will rule. These kings, you know, will rule, and then from here it just gets worse. That is, you know, the discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam. But despite the fact that Kali is entrenched in this age, one can remain aloof from the influence of Kali by taking shelter of the holy name. And to have faith in the holy name, one should hear the Srimad Bhagavatam very, very scrutinizingly from the devotees of the Lord. And if one does that, one will understand that the holy name of the Lord is not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it is the only possible means of attaining liberation. And what to speak of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so merciful. Generally, in Kali Yuga, one should chant the holy name of the Lord. But we're fortunate because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us something more than just a process of chanting the holy names by which we can become free from the, or liberated from the influence of Kali Yuga. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave a unique contribution, which is not singing for, you know, even several days of the life of, you know, within the life of Brahma. You know, within billions and billions of years, we don't see the contribution that Chaitanya. What is that contribution? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the opportunity not just to become liberated from the influence of Kali, but actually to develop prema bhakti, or pure love for the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, who are always absorbed so much in love for the Lord that, you know, if their eyes blink, they're feeling separation. Oh, you know, my eyes blinked, it's like a million years went by. You know, that I was looking at Krishna, the form of Krishna, my eyes blinked. And if they spend, you know, a night time equal to Lord Brahma with the Supreme Lord, they're so enjoying, you know, it's just gone by in a moment. That level of love. Actually, this mood, even, you know, if we take just this day of Brahma and you go back to all the saints, all the religious teachers, all the spiritual or religious movements, you'll find, even within our movement, that this mood of pure love for the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna does not appear in our sampradaya until even up to Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya, although he's in our sampradaya, the mood was very ritualistic ceremonies and activities. But up until Madhavendra Puri, who was the spiritual master of Vishwara Puri, who was the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in Madhavendra Puri, the seeds first manifest of this mood of pure love. And Madhavendra Puri, he wrote one verse, and in that verse appeared within his heart by the mercy of Srimati Radharani. Because she actually spoke that verse. And she was so pleased with his, you know, service that she allowed that mood and verse to manifest through the words and the poetry of Madhavendra Puri. And you know, my dear Lord, you know, I am very fallen, very lowly, very poor, because I don't have your association. I have nothing. You know, there is nothing. Nothing else in this world. I am very poor. And because I don't have your association, I am praying to you because you are very, very compassionate to, you know, a person such as myself. Can you let me know, when will I see you again? How will I see you again? You know, it's like that prayer of George Harrison. I really want to see you like that. That is the seed of pure love of God first manifested in Madhavendra Puri, and that came through his disciple Vishwara Puri, and then fully blossomed in the activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How did Vishwara Puri become the spiritual master, that mood of love of God become even more prevalent in Vishwara Puri? Because Vishwara Puri served his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri, at the last stages of his life. He was so invalid that practically he couldn't move. And Vishwara Puri used to go there and he would clean the stool and the urine, everything, you know, looking after his spiritual master. And he would chant the Lord's holy names. And his spiritual master was then helping his spiritual master to remember, and he would recite the pastimes of Krishna, and his spiritual master becomes so pleased with this Vishwara. He said, I can only ask Krishna that he give you his full blessings for this. Of course, he was so pleased that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to glorify him. You are such a nice devotee. I accept you as my spiritual master. I did say, here's God, here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then that mood of pure love then fully blossomed in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's described that actually the tree of bhakti is like a blossoming lotus flower, that the seed first began in the teachings to Lord Brahma. Right at the beginning of the creation. And there were four topics that later became the four key slokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we're studying now in the second canto. There is knowledge of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his incarnations. There's knowledge of his material energy. There is knowledge of sadhana bhakti and there is knowledge of prema bhakti. Those four seeds are the four seeds of the Srimad Bhagavatam, four seed slokas, and from there the Srimad Bhagavatam expanded. That seed of the blossoming lotus flower of bhakti began to develop buds with the appearance of Prahlad Maharaj. And then, with the appearance of Srila Vyasadeva and the acharyas that taught Srila Vyasadeva's Srimad Bhagavatam philosophy, the petals began to unfold. And then with the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that flower of bhakti fully bloomed, taking away everyone's breath, and the fragrance covers the whole universe. So, you know, people, if the people of this world become absorbed that how can I attain love for Krishna, not how can I get more money and satisfy my greed, and how can I satisfy my lust, and how can I, you know, satisfy my tongue, and how can I get power, and this and that. Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, you know, you replace those degraded desires that you will have in Kali Yuga with this desire, let me love God on that platform of the gopis, and that opportunity is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the first time. And if people take that opportunity, no one will experience any of the influences of Kali Yuga. Even if the influence, but those who are, you know, do not take to the chanting of the holy names, do not take to the establishing of Bhagavatam, these kings will be their leaders and they will suffer terribly in the future. Any questions?
I heard that when Mahaprabhu, after Mahaprabhu's appearances, like the culmination of Kali, you were mentioned in the public times.
The Srimad Bhagavatam just gives the essence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, but that sort of information, more detailed information, is usually found in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and those various writings by devotees who had direct association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teachings. So, you know, really one has to go through those teachings. We'll get to that one day, and then Bhakti Sarva Dhamma, do Bhakti Bhagavata, Bhakti Vedanta, which is the next, the last six cantos of Krishna Bhagavatam, and we'll get to the Bhakti Sarva Dhamma, study the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But that sort of information is in those books. And because, you know, all of these personalities from Krishna Lila, Krishna's father, his grandfather, Sandipani Muni, they all appeared in Chaitanya 500 years ago, you know, so common, 500 years ago, they all appeared in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And give us that opportunity. Thank you. You were asking me, who is Radharani's father? I looked it up yesterday. Just to make sure it's not Sudan, it's Sridhar. Sridhar. But you know, all of these personalities, they actually appear, like a lot of cowboy boys actually appear as associates of each other. They're very fortunate. And they're very foolish not to take advantage of the sankirtan.
When is that description given?
Jagadharma, chapter 10.
Where
is that description about the, you know, the blossoming flower of the, the lotus flower of the bhakti? That's in the Jagadharma, spoken by Bhaktivinoda Kaur. All right, thank you very much. Thank you.